kind greeting that you gave me this morning. I really appreciate it. Though I have to confess that, you know, I've been doing this for almost 40 years, and I always come away from worshiping with you feeling like I've gotten far more than I've received, given. So this is a gift for me, too. Now, the lectionary reading for today's Sunday is actually in Mark's Gospel, but I decided that I would take the very same event that Mark talks about and have you listen to it from Luke, because Luke adds just a couple of fairly minor details that I think that are actually quite important. The story that you heard from Luke is obviously very simple, very familiar. In fact, for some people, it's so simple, they wonder why it's included in the gospel at all. Surprisingly, though, it's in three of our four gospels. The problem, I think, is that we breeze through stories like this, and then we think, oh, how lovely, Jesus heals a blind man. And then we go to the next event. What we forget is that stories like this are not meant to entertain us. They're meant to teach us. And so I want us all this morning to go back and revisit that story, but I want us to slow way down and really listen for what it's trying to tell us. To make that happen as we move through the story, I want you to try to visualize it. We're at that point in Jesus' life where he has begun his last march to Jerusalem. And he knows why it's his last march. But as it's taken him several weeks to get there, and as he's approaching Jericho now, the crowds have become larger and noisier and more expectant. And there's a lot of people now who are beginning to wonder if Jesus might actually be the long-awaited Messiah. Luke's text opens as Jesus and the crowd approach Jericho, which is the last major city you have to go through before you begin that final ascent up to Jerusalem, which is only about 20 miles away. Now, in the midst of all this excitement, we discover there is sitting by the road in the dirt a fairly insignificant individual, a blind beggar, as we read in verse 35. As Jesus approached Jericho, a blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. Now, obviously, the reason this man is begging is because he is blind, which back then meant he had no trade. There was no specialized training for people with disabilities. There was no social safety net. There wasn't apparently even for this man any family support. And so he had no other choice but to sit there in the dirt by the road and beg from whoever happened to walk by. He was entirely dependent on other people. What such a life would do to a person's self-esteem, I think it's hard for any of us here today to even imagine. But on this particular day, he detects suddenly a very unusual noise approaching. Hearing, after all, is this man's specialty. The blind, I am told, develop a very acute sense of hearing to compensate for their lack of sight. And so on this day, away in the distance, he can tell that a crowd is coming that's larger than any crowd he has ever heard before. And so as it approaches, we read in verse 37, when he heard the crowd going by, he asked what was happening. And they told him, Jesus of Nazareth is passing by. Now there's little doubt that even this blind beggar had heard all the many, many stories that had been circulating every day for two or three years now about the amazing rabbi from Galilee, from Nazareth. And what must have struck this individual most was all the amazing healing stories that he had heard about, especially the stories about people being healed of their blindness. The stories were so numerous and so well attested that I'm sure he knew they were true. So imagine what that did to this man's head. Imagine all of the daydreams that must have floated through his head, thinking about, wow, what it would be like to actually be able to see, to be able to go wherever you wanted and to work for your own food. And also he must have thought long and hard about, is there any way I could somehow connect with this Jesus from Nazareth and seek his help? And that's where he would run into a brick wall. Because how does a blind beggar connect with a great rabbi who spent most of his time 80 miles to the north up in Galilee? Such an idea was so remote as to seem impossible. Impossible, that is, until this moment. And so when he's told that Jesus of Nazareth is passing by, imagine what instantly went racing through his mind and how he doesn't hesitate even for a second. He knows exactly what he must do. And so we read in verse 38, he cried out, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. He knows that this is his one and only chance, and he's determined not to let it slip by. He begins to yell, pleading to be heard. But to his dismay, suddenly the crowd turns on him. As we read, those who led the way rebuked him and told him to be quiet. Now, you may wonder, why did the crowd respond like this? I suspect they felt it was inappropriate for a dirty beggar to be crying out like that at all. They may have been thinking, doesn't he know that this is the great rabbi, Jesus, who's visiting our fair city? This is the prophet who's been proclaiming the kingdom of God. The beggar should show more respect. The text tells us they rebuked him, which means essentially they scolded him for his behavior. And it makes me wonder, how would we have responded, perhaps, had we been among the bystanders, waving to Jesus from the sidelines as he passed by, enjoying the moment, caught up in the excitement of the crowd, only to be jolted by the sudden screams of this beggar? Would we have been disturbed, embarrassed, irritated? But to everyone's dismay, nothing seems to deter the blind man. It only makes him more desperate. He will be heard, and no one, absolutely no one, is going to silence him. And so what we read next should not surprise us when we read, but he shouted all the more, Son of David, have mercy on me. Now there's two very different verbs that are used in verses 38 and 39. Verse 38 literally reads, he cried out, which describes a very loud emotional yell. But in 39, when the people in the crowd try to muzzle this man, he becomes frantic. He realizes his one chance is slipping away. And so the word used here now is a scream, even a wail. It's a word that was used of women in labor. This man began to yell like he had never yelled before. And as a result, we read in verse 40, Jesus stopped and ordered that the man be brought to him. You know, it's always remarkable to me that in the midst of all that noise that such a crowd generated, all the jostling and the people vying for Jesus' attention, that somehow he could isolate that one beggar's voice and respond to it. But you know, this is actually a characteristic of Jesus throughout all of the Gospels. He somehow always managed to hear things that most of us would have filtered out. He listened with the ears that God listens with, able to separate mere noise from a genuine plea for help. Now, there is no doubt that there were probably people in the crowd who found Jesus stopping unnecessary. They may have whispered to him, "Lord, it's just a beggar. The elders of the city are waiting." But it was too late. Jesus had heard the man's cry, and now he would respond. In fact, the text tells us that Jesus commanded that the beggar be brought to him, implying that he did so under the protests of other people. But also, please notice something important here. When the blind man is brought to Jesus, he doesn't exploit or patronize him, but in the most sensitive and matter-of-fact way, he asks the man a simple question. As we read, "When he came near, Jesus asked him, 'What do you want me to do for you?'" Now, Jesus knows the man is blind. It's obvious to everybody. And yet he still asks the man, "What do you want?" He wants the man to be heard, to speak for himself. Jesus could have just impatiently healed him and then sent him on his way. But no, he's there. He's fully present with the man. And so when at last the beggar has this one chance to petition the great healer, he does not hesitate. "Lord," he replied, "I want to see." There's nothing casual about that response. There's no second guessing, no questioning of whether maybe this is too much to ask or whether Jesus could actually do it. He knows Jesus can do it, which is why he refused to shut up in the first place. He knows what he needs and who can help him. And as a result, this is the reply he receives. Jesus said to him, "Receive your sight. Your faith has healed you." Now, our English translations completely inadequate as far as what actually happens in these words. The very first thing out of Jesus' mouth is actually just a single word in the Greek, and it's in the imperative, in the voice of command. He looks at the man in the face and he says, "See!" And then he gives him quiet encouragement by saying, "Your faith has healed you," which is to say, you have come to the right place. And the result we read in verse 43, immediately he received his sight. Now, I do not think that words can capture what happens at this point. To go from a world of total darkness to a world where suddenly everything becomes vivid, three-dimensional, colorful, when things you had only imagined suddenly came into focus. It must have been a point where the man was speechless, even breathless. And the very first image that was burned into his consciousness was, of course, the face of Christ. A man he really didn't know, but a man who would become the center of his life from this point on. As we read in verse 43, or the next verse, suddenly the man followed Jesus, praising God. In short, this man wasn't merely physically healed of his blindness, but he was given insight and a changed life. These are the sure signs of someone who has been genuinely touched by Christ. Their life becomes that of a follower and a worshiper. But such a faith is also contagious. And so the story closes with these words: when the people saw it, they also praised God. The very people who moments before had tried to shut the beggar up had now witnessed the incredible breadth of God's love, a love that hears all, cares for all, and treats all people as equally deserving of God's grace. So that's the story, but what's the takeaway for us? Ironically, in spite of the fact that we are often unaware of it, all of us in this room today are a lot like the man sitting by the road. Truth be told, we are all to some extent spiritually blind, impoverished, and unable to help ourselves. I know we're not accustomed to thinking of ourselves this way, but it's true as far as how we relate to God. It's those Beatitudes all over again that I talked about several weeks ago. The poor in spirit, the mourning, the hungering and thirsting. But even if we acknowledge all of this, you know, in another way, many of us here today are we actually like that blind man? How many of us are actually frustrated with our blindness and our poverty? How many of us seek Christ with the hunger and the desperation and the single-mindedness that that man demonstrated? Yes, we may periodically play around with our spiritual life, tinkering with this or that activity, dutifully attending church, dabbling in something that might foster a closer walk with God. But too often, you know, our heart really isn't in it. Yes, we all want more of God, but then, underneath it all, do we really? And if we don't, Jesus quietly passes us by. One of the oldest and most universal prayers among Christians is called the Kyrie Eleison, which is an ancient Greek phrase that simply means, Lord, have mercy. You'll find it in Catholic, Orthodox, Anglican, and Protestant liturgies. It's a prayer that originated from the many times you hear it in the New Testament, like the story today where twice the beggar cries out, Lord, have mercy. Kyrie eleison, may that become the deepest prayer of our hearts. May we be among those who refuse to be silenced by the noise of this world, who seek God with all our heart, and who long to have our eyes open and to behold the face of Christ. Amen.